Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are singing in the rain in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a return to winning ways on Saturday as goals from Danny Welbeck and Jack Hinchinwood were enough to see us edge past Brentford in the pouring Amex rain. But it did take an injury time penalty save from Bart Verruggen to secure the points that leaves us sick going into this weekend's fixture at Nottingham Forest. It's a game that sees us return to the scene of the worst performance of Fabian Hertzler's reign, so let's hope we can avenge that 7-0 defeat at the City Ground. And the games are now coming thick and fast as we are also in action midweek with Aston Villa, our visitors. The league is looking pretty congested at the moment, so adding 6 points to the total will put us in a great position as we head into the busy Christmas period. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome back a man who would know exactly how to put out a forest fire. It's Andy Message. And joining Andy is a very fond welcome back to Justin Brentnell. Hello, everyone. How are we all?
Hello.
Yes, hello. It's November. Good. We're about as well as we can be expected.
Well, yeah, well, there is that. But I haven't been Whamageddon this week, so that's good. So
it doesn't count. Well, OK, just to let people know, we're recording this particular show on the 25th of November, the evening of the 25th. Whamageddon doesn't start till the 1st of December. And more to the point, Adrian, I told you this.
Yeah, I know. But it's like... But,
so you can wham yourself stupid. And no, and also, although it's technically not against the rules, it's kind of highly frowned upon. Is that if someone tries to force feed you the song as well, that's kind of, it's against the spirit of it. It's a bit like what I can't remember the cricketing phrase, but when you're doing the run up and you knock the bales off.
But, Andy, welcome back. Nice to see you. And have you dried off from the weekend?
Yes. I didn't go to the game. I was at home in Suffolk, so yeah, I stayed pretty dry in my at home. Unfortunately, I didn't get down to see it.
So, are you a Suffolk? Are you an expat in there, or is Suffolk native to you?
Yeah, no. I grew up in Sussex and lived in sort of like, you know, Sompting originally, and then all over, and then I've been up here sort of, well, nearly 25 years now. Lived in Sudbury about 20 years. I get down to as many as I can, but it's an away game every week for me. So sometimes can't make it and work at weekends as well. So yeah.
Now, Justin, if you had the opportunity, would you know how to put out a forest fire?
No.
No, I should point out that it is an occupational hazard for Mr. Message here, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah, no, that's no, you're right, AD. I work in the fire service. I've done up here for 21 years. I got a medal recently for 20 years long service and good conduct.
Congratulations!
Thank you. I think everyone gets it for 20 years.
Even so,
but yeah, no, I smile. No, it's. It's great. It's a job I really love, and I love living up here. It's, although I've got more friends back home, even though I've been lived up here for a very long time. Probably tells you something about me more than them. Than
everyone else. That's all right. I'm from Brighton. I live in Goring, but I've still got no friends out here. So.
That's true.
No, listen, let's get on to
Saturday afternoon in the wet, when we were quite lucky, Justin.
Yeah. I think we were. I am used to seeing every single penalty against Brighton and Hove Albion go in. And so to see one that didn't, I certainly thought it was our lucky day.
That's a good point. When was the last penalty saved? I'm just trying to work it out.
Well, it was Jason Steele. As a Brentford player lined up to take Igor Thiago, lined up to take the first penalty, my son informed me that Verbruggen had never made a save in the Premier League for Brighton before. And I said, do you think he'll save this one? And he said, no.
Well, he was correct on both counts.
Yep. But I asked him the same question prior to the final penalty, and he said, yes, he will save it. And I corrected him and said, no, he won't. Don't be silly. It's for Bruggen. And he did.
So have you changed his name to Nostra Woody now?
Yeah. He predicted the score as well.
Is he going to be picking your lottery numbers next week?
I think so. I think so.
Okay. Well, when there was a bit of a surprise, Al, when the team news came out, in the fact that they had no Lewis Dunk in it, and it was a first league start for Olivier Bascali.
Yeah, I mean, my reading of it was that that the Brentford forwards would be a bit sort of lively and a bit wild, and I don't get me wrong, I thought the Brentford were fairly lively. They are a team that moves the ball around, and that Boscali would be that bit much more mobile than Dunk. But then watching Match of the Day, Jonathan Pearce commentating saying that Dunk had picked up a wee bit of a bug during the week and wasn't 100% ready to start. So. You know, I mean, I was talking to people afterwards and they're saying, oh, is this the start of the changing of the guard? And for me, no, it isn't, because I don't know about anyone else. Let's throw in Andy on hit on this one. I think Lewis Dunk has returned to something close to his best, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. No, he's maybe it's a bit of that pressure for the place. And it's in Boscali and Cobbler come in and he's sort of stepped up a little bit. But I think I've been really impressed with him this season and the second half. Incidentally, we can't seem to put two good halves of football together across one game. But the second half, we were a lot different, we're a lot better. Boscali was different, brought the ball out a lot more, didn't he? Sort of like brought it forward. But he seemed to make a few decisions which weren't great, and it was a bit of a fault, I think, for the penalty. I think it was out of position. So no, Dunk definitely for me, he's aging like a fine wine, as they say, but Danny Welbeck every day in commentary, I think.
Okay, AD, let's have it. So we've already got Danny Malbec for the fine wine. What would be the equivalent for Lewis Dunk then? And don't say Lewis Dunk IPA because they don't mature.
Well, that
Lewis
I'll
Plonk.
answers on a postcard. What was that?
Lewis Plonk.
Yeah, that.
Close.
Well, no, it's supposed to be maturing like a fine wine, and a plonk is something, frankly, it's sticking
Yeah.
to radiators.
But maybe
No,
that
closer.
was last season.
That would be Plumpton, wouldn't it? Plumpton Plonk, but
No, it's fine.
which is
The other thing I
absolutely
was going to
awful
say,
stuff,
the other
but.
thing I was going to say about Boscali is that, I mean, and it follows on from Andy's point. There was a couple of times he was out of place, and you know the sort of like the terrifying thing that the team does and has done for a long time is play it around the back, trying to entice the opposition out. I saw it probably two or three times. It wasn't that obvious, but I saw it two or three times where both Van Hecke and Verbruggen were pointing to Boscali as if to say, you're supposed to be kind of 10 yards over there. They always need the out ball. Obviously, they've been practicing like stupid because, I mean, certainly for the past season and a half, and yes, this is going to be my fault when it goes wrong against Forest, but they haven't cocked that particular plan up for quite a while. Sometimes it's nearly gone wrong, but we haven't suffered for it unless someone's going to tell me, oh, there was that time when dot, dot, dot. So they've got that kind of thing off pat, and I think they're realizing that Boscali wasn't necessarily, you know, they have their starting position, and they both had to tell him more than once, you're supposed to be over there, go another 10 yards over that way, kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one thing to do that in training every day and try and get the muscle memory of doing it. But when you're doing it in a match situation, the only way you
Absolutely. Yeah.
is practice. And basically, at some point, you've got to throw these people in at the deep end. And to be honest, I don't think he did an awful lot wrong. I don't think he was really at fault for that. The only reason he really got hooked was, I think, because he got a yellow card.
Yeah, and you got a yellow card for being out of position in the first place, which I think is Andy's
Well, the
point.
yellow card he got, I mean, a cue psychedelic refereeing Graham
What?
Kavanagh yet again. He got booked for nothing. He got booked for being fouled. It was
Well, no, I think it was a what it was a shoulder to shoulder or a coming together. It's I
it
think that
wasn't
the
even a
irritate
foul, Al. It wasn't even a foul.
the
It was
I
the
wouldn't say.
referee. And I mean, there's been some weird refereeing again this weekend, and you know. When you've got a game that's going on in those sort of conditions, I think the referees have to show a degree of common sense to it to a certain degree.
Yeah, but he's not going to, is he?
Well, no, they don't.
Oh, okay. So, what's your point?
They should. That's what my point is.
Right. Well, they're not going to. So we have to. It's kind of just. It's a bit like sort of. Well, it's here in England. It's going to rain. Just accept it.
Yeah, but
I mean, I was really excited when we signed him. I thought, oh, okay, we're gonna push on, and we, he's gonna be a bit of an upgrade from Dunk. But I just haven't seen it so far. I think he's a good backup for him. But yeah,
well,
as not thinking he's there yet. Maybe meaning he's a bit more time.
well, this is the thing. I mean, for all the big signings that we have made, and I think the club seems to be going more of the oven ready players rather than the quote ones for the future. Even the likes of Kostoulas and Simas, although they're only kids, they were thrown in for the first team sort of relatively quickly. But even then, they've taken each of them a half, two thirds, maybe a little bit longer of a season to really bed in. I mean, I know that this is the person I want to talk about next, is the vast improvement this season and fairly consistent form of Ferdi Carayoglu, who admittedly he spent a lot of last season injured, but this time around he's getting the left back berth ahead of De Kuyper, and I think making a decent fist of it. I mean, am I alone in thinking this? Anyone want to come in on that?
Justin,
I'll come in on that. No, I agree with you. I think he represents the kind of archetypal Hertzler player as well. So, Hertzler really does enjoy kind of in his systems. They're kind of like musical chairs, and somebody goes out of position, and it's up to another player to go in and take that position and to rotate the team around the pitch. And he is very good at that. In a recent game, he seemed to have played almost every position on the pitch. He didn't. He was a lot more disciplined, I think, against Brentford, and they had a very, very interesting setup where Ouattara on their right wing, I thought was incredibly threatening for them, and he couldn't really afford to go on sort of a walkabout too much. But yeah, I think he's in the, if you look at the players who have been consistent and good this season, he's easily top five. He's a name people are talking about.
Andy, is Ferdi a top five player this season for you?
I think so. I think so. I think some players probably haven't performed as well as they could have done. I'm thinking of Belieber in particular, and I don't want to keep.
Oh, you have read my script. Okay.
If I hear one more commentator talk about his head being turned, I don't know. I must be dizzy by the number of times I've heard that. But he hasn't clicked, has he, this year?
No.
But for Kadıgoglu, I think I heard he's one of the highest earners that we've got at the club as well. I don't know if that's true or not. But I think it was a lot of interest in him when he came to us. And yeah, he's finally showing after that last season where he couldn't really do a great deal. He's showing what he can do, I think.
But he came to us with a quite a big reputation. I mean, I think the best way to describe him would be marauding. He marauds. It's like he had that run, didn't he, in the second half where he just picked up the ball, a loose ball in the edge of his own box, and ran the length of the pitch and got a shot away, which went wide. But that,
well,
which
frankly,
was,
there was nothing else he could do, really. I mean,
well,
there were
I
two
mean,
players up with him, but seeing as the Brentford team were just backing off and backing off and backing off, well, it was an invite to just say, well, do you know, whatever Turkish or Dutch is for, do you know what, son, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
All right, he shanked his shot at the end, but I also think it was the right decision to take the shot because the other two, whoever they were up with him, and it was good that they were up with him, you know, they weren't really in a position, they weren't necessarily in a better position.
Well, I mean, they provided a dummy and gave the defender something to think about, didn't they? But I mean, I'm still not entirely sure exactly what his best position is. And I think once Carew is back fit, will we see him as enterprising as he has been the last couple of weeks, or will he switch to right back where he can also play?
You have to bear in mind that each time most recently games he's started at left back, and any time that we've changed it around, De Kuyper has come on, obviously not as a straight swap for Kadıoğlu, but for someone else, and therefore there's always a little bit of a change in formation by pushing Kadıoğlu further forward. Like you say, he's not an out and out wing. I think I've said this before, if we played as a back five, I think he'd make a very good wing back.
I think so. I think that would be his best position.
I think I'd probably prefer to see him on the left-hand side, although I'm sure he could do a job on the right-hand side. But the point is that we're again, although he's clearly starting as left-back, and whoever it was made the point just now, Justin was saying that, you know, we have to be that flexible, that fluid. I mean, Gomez sometimes ends up at left-back, and then he'll, the next thing you see is that over on the right-hand side, you have to have, although they have their sort of responsibilities, they're fluid enough that actually being in the middle of the park is perfectly all right. You know, when you see them score their goals, you think, hang on, you're supposed to be like De Kuyper when he scored against Chelsea. We think, hang on, you're supposed to be the left back and you've ended up in the middle of the 6-yard box. Mm. It doesn't matter. The point is that we have that flexibility and fluidity, and with someone else covering with that rotation, yeah, even within a game, that it probably doesn't matter. So if you say what's his best position, well, I'm perfectly happy with what he's doing.
De Kuyper did. De Kuyper did actually start his career with Bruges as a winger, and he ended up going further back because he does marauding, doesn't he? He likes to patrol that touchline.
What do you mean by marauding? I know it's a commonly used word here, and I don't know how much Dogma uses this word within their text, but what do you mean by it?
Look it up.
There's any number of things. Do you mean actually carrying the ball, like Andy said, carrying the ball like Boscali did?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Got ya.
Right. Like running at pace with blowing hair like a musketeer with a musket and a horse marauding through the town as he pillages his way to a hat trick. Or something. Well, speaking of another person who doesn't do marauding, I'm not quite sure what he does, but he's one of what Justin will definitely say is in the top five of players this season, probably in the top one, in fact. And that's Yankuba Minte.
Yeah, top one is exactly right. He did a lot of good things on Saturday, but I'd like to kind of point out his work rate, which I thought was phenomenal. And he does this thing where he is doing that high press and he's doing it in the 80th minute, in the 90th minute, and he's running up to one player, they're passing it, he's following the ball to the keeper, they're passing it to another player, he's following the ball. I just forget the world-class cross, actually. Forget all of that. It is his attitude, it is work rate. I just think spot on. Decision-making, great. He needs to improve that, but I thought he was brilliant on Saturday.
Yeah, Andy, his energy is just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I don't think ever had energy like that at any stage in my life for even 5 minutes. But like you said, I think wasn't he chasing down in the Chelsea game as well, didn't he? You know, I think he led to our last goal. And yeah, like Justin said, he just doesn't stop going. And he is our creative outlet at the moment, isn't it? And he's without Carew on the other wing, I'd be a bit nervous if we lost Yankuba for a prolonged period of time.
He's not going to AFCON, is he?
I think Belieber is.
No, Belieber's definitely not. The Rune didn't make it.
Oh, right.
What, to the World Cup or to the Cup of Nations?
No, to the AFCON we're talking about here.
Oh, I'm getting confused with the World Cup. So no,
AFCON's early, it's January, February, isn't it? Something like that. I'm not 100% sure. This is where you and I, Aidy, between us, have failed because we've asked the question that we should have known the answer to. But okay, everyone's screaming at their headphones now.
No, I don't think.
No, but I mean, there was that chance that Minte created in the first half where he basically twisted the bee's blood. And then a cheeky back heel set up Mats Fifa, whose shot was well saved by Kelleher. But, you know, he's doing that. And he's actually, I mean, I've been very critical of him, as most people will know, because it's like he's so frustrating. We know that he has got an end product and we know how good he can be in both boxes. It's just the consistency of decision making it just lets himself down occasionally, doesn't it?
Have you noticed, I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but he doesn't actually take it to the byline until the second half. apart from that, he'll cut in or cut back, which is what he did for that chance you've just mentioned there. He'll cut in, hoping, and to be fair, he did it. It was kind of the setup for the goal. He cuts inside, tries to get the space. He'll get the shot away then, you know, given the fact that then his defender is opposite him, he's only about 6 inches away, but he'll still try and do that. But that the thing that you've just mentioned there just now was the first time we've seen that. And that is actually something that could easily be set up, because he'll easily take away two or three defenders with him while he's going across the box in order to try and find an angle or find a bit of space. And of course, then that leaves the area behind him free. So I'd like to think I'm going to see that one again, possibly hopefully even with a better result, because I think that could be a route into goal possibly.
I can confirm that Gambia have not qualified for AFCON, so he will be with us in January.
Yeah, maybe.
And I can confirm Cameroon have qualified, so Baliba will probably can't wait to get away, to be honest. But
let's talk about Carlos, because I mean it's frustrating, and like there's been more and more stuff coming out from Fabian about in regards to it. I mean, how long can we keep carrying him, for want of a better phrase? Because we know how good he is. We know how good he is, and he's played pretty much every game. But he got hooked at half time on Saturday, and it's not the first time he's been hooked at half time.
Andy, has he had his head turned, Andy?
I think it might be mentioned once or twice in the press, Al. I don't know if you've heard that, but single.
Is it a bit like Hertzler? He's a young chap, isn't he?
Yeah, he's how old is he? Yeah, no, and Dan Byrne was tall as well. And that was mentioned in one of those.
Is he?
Yeah, those Albion bingo comments. No, I think, I don't know. We don't even know if United were seriously interested. It's just people wanted something to talk about, don't they? Mm. He's not doing his value any good for us. No. So maybe he wants to take him out the starting lineup with Hinshelwood coming back as well, or putting Weaver into there. Because I don't know. I think he needs to take out the firing line. I see another one for you.
After the game, Fabian was saying, he said, regarding Carlos, we know he's still not there, but we want to have him. We need to help him. We need to get an understanding for his situation. He's still a very young player, so we have to keep pushing, and I'm sure he will get back to his highest level. It's our responsibility to give him the environment where he can improve, and it's his responsibility for sure to take ownership of this and keep pushing. So is he taking ownership of this, Justin?
I think, to me, he just looks a bit lost and confused. He lost the edge that he had. I'm not going to speculate why it's happened, but I'm just about to do that. So
go on then. don't speculate, Justin. Guess.
I think a lot of it has to do with his age, and development is not linear, and it's kind of like you're flying or you're climbing. You suddenly look down and you think, oh, I'm very, very high up here, and you sort of freeze. Somebody to compare him to, I guess, would be Kobe Manu at Man United, who had a season and a half, and he started looking very good. He was getting picked by England. I think he went to a tournament. And then suddenly he just had that kind of, they're like the shakes or something. It's just like, oh, am I actually this good? I don't know. If it's a loss of confidence, something along those lines. But I do think he's got the ability to get back to where he is. I think it's more complex than the easy throwaway media line. Oh, Man United have come in for him now, and that's all he can think about.
I mean, with Manu, it was more of a change of manager in a different environment. And United's a toxic place at the best of times anyway. So, Carlos, don't go there. You can do better than that. But it's like...
But even so, the point is that Hertzler has made a comment about that something, and like I say, this is where then the press then kick in and say, well, it must be this. Well, it could be actually 100 things. You don't know what's going on in a person's life. You don't know what it is that affects them. You don't know how they are. It could be any number of things. And this is why speculation has no value here. All that it is that we see a symptom, and we're looking, well, the club is looking for an answer. Apart from that, more to the point, irrespective of the fact that there is a sense of entitlement among some that say, well, it's our club, we pay the wages, we pay this, we pay that. You know, we should be not exactly entitled to know, but I've got to say, ultimately, it's none of our business.
No.
You know, I honestly
think that him going off to AFCON is actually at this point. Is actually probably a good thing for him. I think it will actually give him a chance to be in a different environment, and you know, away from here from a little bit, and actually just to get his head down. And you know, he clearly loves playing for his country. Cameroon haven't been any great shakes recently, actually. So a fit and firing Belieber they need him to in order to like progress in that competition, because they have been successful there. So
but it genuinely depends on what the issue is. That's the point. I mean, you're saying going to Africa will hopefully sort him out. Hopefully, well, yes.
You know what? People were saying this about Lewis Dunk last season, that he's gone, his form is out the window, and then he needs to be moved on. And you know, he's come back this season, and he's back to his best. We know there's mitigating circumstances for Lewis, like lack of fitness, tiredness, not having a break. With Carlos, you know, we know the player that we've all seen, and we hope we get to see him again, and in a Brighton shirt. But you know, we're all behind him. We're not slagging him off, because we know how important he is to this team and to this club. But we just, how long can we like carry him all the time he is in this funk?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? And that's what Hertzl is getting paid for. I mean, the point you're making there about people saying, oh, Dunk's finished, he's going to move on. Well, anyone who said that has now been, unless they're really sort of stubborn in their outlook, they've been proved wrong because X, Y, Z. And this is it. I mean, and quite rightly, the club's not saying what the issue. I mean, Hertzl, in that thing that you've just read out, if that's, you know, the case, then the club realises there's something, but above and beyond that, we're just going to have to. We have no choice as fans, but to be patient and just wait for him to get back to form.
Okay. Now the question is here, though: did he concede a penalty? Well, he obviously did, because the ref gave it and they scored. Now there's been conjecture about this week. I mean, watching it live and watching the replays of it, I thought, well, yeah, no, that probably is a penalty. But it's been looked at by some referees today, and they're saying it was a dive.
Go on, who wants to go on this?
I'll have a go on that. initially, I thought the player, was it Thiago or was it Ataro?
Ataro who took the tumble, yeah.
Yeah, so his first touch, he kicks it, but I think that's just after Belieber's made contact. But he kicks
Belieber had already gone to ground by the time that had happened. So
he's not gonna. He wouldn't have been able to retrieve the ball. The ball was out when he kicked it. Belieber goes in, and it's sort of his boots. He catches the Brentford player with his upper thigh as he's sort of diving, and it's not. He didn't. The Brentford player could have stayed on his feet, and I get that point. But if you're lunging in like that,
it looks bad. It looks bad. Yeah. But I mean, it's again. I mean, we mentioned this earlier, Andy. The conditions didn't help him.
I think he started that tackle from the halfway line, didn't he? just continued on. I mean, it was minimal contact.
Did remind me, there was a brilliant sliding tackle from Richard Carpenter against Luton at Withdean, and it was absolutely biblical weather
miles,
that day.
Didn't they?
And he did actually start that tackle in Worthing. I mean, it was...
It's only because we have a running track that he was able to stop.
Have you seen?
I mean, you said you weren't at the game yourself, there, Andy. But have you? You must have seen the incident itself. I mean, if the boot was on the other foot, would you be screaming for it?
Yeah, of course we would. There looked like there was a little bit of contact, wouldn't there? And and they reviewed it, didn't they? They reviewed it, and I don't know. I mean, the both of them look particularly soft. I'm sure we're going to talk about the other one as well.
Yeah.
But you know, it did there was minimal contact, but I'd have probably been,
We've been calling for it. I mean, it's one of those. But then, you know, having seen the Jorginho one at Palace last week, which again, I mean, he did go over too easy. Watara went over too easy. You know, one got turned around, one didn't. It's that consistency again. But
it's more the case of the. I felt that in real time, I felt that the Brentford player was on his way down before he got to Belieber. But there's a couple of things to consider here. One, the Brentford player did get the ball first. Two, Belieber didn't touch the ball at all. He did catch the Brentford player, albeit it didn't wipe him out. I don't accept the conditions as being a mitigating circumstance because it's the same for every player. Except this point as well. I think the Brentford player was looking for it and Belieber obliged him. And in a circumstance like that, then the referee has no choice but to give a penalty. And as soon as he did so, there was no way it was going to be seen as a clear and obvious error.
All right. OK, well, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. The show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited. Alan, where can you get your flowers from?
Well, you can get them from anywhere, but just this time of year, it's going to be a bit tricky because the best flowers are in the summer, but they do have year-round ones, especially if you grow them hydroponically in the Netherlands and they can get them shipped here. But I think that probably what we've got here is a lot of native flowers, but what they actually say for the service they can offer you is whatever your reason for sending flowers or gifts, we can help. If it's a birthday, anniversary, birth, celebration, net, thank you, sympathy, sorry, or anything else, we have the answer. If it's a wedding or a corporate event, our team will come up with something to wow you. And I love the fact they put wow in capital letters here. If it's a funeral, we can guide you in choosing a tribute that really reflects the life of your loved one. Trust us to provide the service and quality that you really deserve. And all that and much, much more can be found at flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk, the website. You can call them up on 01273 796000. And if you get to speak to a florist, one, they are genuinely lovely people. Two, and if you tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, you can automatically get a 20% discount, which is lovely.
Yeah, and you know what else they do, Al? Because it's that time of year again, isn't it? It's that time where people start to jingle their jangles and put their Christmas trees up. And you know what? You can get Christmas trees from Flowers Unlimited. They do wreaths. They do table decorations. So much more. And
if I didn't know better, AD, I'd say you finally looked at their website.
I always look at their website, but
quite nice actually.
But I haven't looked at it. I haven't looked at it for that. No, but anyway, okay. But like, yes.
And alternatively, if you want to go there in person and choose the flowers, just go to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. Which would be fantastic.
Yeah, there we go.
So thank you to Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited for sponsoring the show.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
So, half-time came and went, and I think it was probably fairly obvious to everyone who was at the game that Belieber was not firing on all cylinders. So, Hertzler, not for the first time, sacrificed his services at half-time. And on came De Kuyper and Dunk. I think Boscali had probably not necessarily had the dearest of baptisms of fire. So, it meant a shuffle around a little bit, and Kadioglu move further up, and I think there was probably, Andy, a little bit more urgency in the second half. Certainly the chances started coming. I think that what we certainly saw, and it led to the goal, was yet another one of the many champagne sprayed passes from Dunk out to Minte. He's quite good at that, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's where he was different to Boscaglia is Boscali, Bosco,
Boscali.
Boscali.
Boscali. That's where he's different to him. Boscali would bring the ball out, wouldn't he? I think tried to do that, and Dunk would pick out those long balls. So yeah, that was we looked like we were more organised with him about as well. It looked like, a bit more authority in the pitch and at the back, as we do lack leaders a little bit, I think, still sometimes on the pitch. And Dunk coming on was a breath of fresh air.
Seemed to steady the ship a little bit, didn't it? And
it did, but it was, we've got a leader in waiting in Jean-Paul Van Hecke. I mean, he does tend to lead by example, and Lewis is always that sort of player who puts his body on the line, getting the blocks in, and that was happening in the first half. I mean, they only had one shot on target in the first half, and that was the penalty. So they didn't actually offer too much, and I thought Boscali was all right. And I mean, obviously that booking didn't help. I mean, that was actually our 32nd booking of the season, amazingly.
I've got to be honest with you, is that all? Because that's after 14 games? I lose track now. How many games have we played now?
12.
Yeah, I think it seems a lot.
That was fewer than three per game.
Well, it still seems a lot. I mean, I think we've gone through games.
We haven't had any red cards yet, have we?
Not yet, but you've probably just jinxed that. But
sorry. So the point
so
I'm making
we're
here,
gonna
Andy,
move
is,
swiftly on.
No, so the point I'm making here, Andy, is that that pass from Dunk to Minte, and I think Van Hecke likes to do it to whoever was playing on the left wing at the time as well, is clearly a tactic. And when they get it right, I think that's sometimes when you see it seems like they're mucking around at the back, which can be frustrating. But it's also indicative, and I want to just come away from the game here, because Adi was talking, I think, fairly earlier on about it being Hertzler's 50th league match in charge, and from the stats, he's got the most number of points of any of the managers recently. So do you subscribe to the theory that Hertzler is not the manager that we want, given the stats that have just come out?
Oh, I think Potter and De Zerbi kind of had one way of doing things, and I don't think Hertzler's afraid to switch it up. I think he's not prescribed to one way of playing. He seems to have a bit more flexibility about trying to knock the long balls in or try something a little bit differently. That's where I think he's got that little bit more flexibility. So I think he balances it out quite well. I think they'll play for what the game needs. Personally, that's why I think
Justin,
they've got more flexibility.
Justin, Minte got the ball from one of Dunk's champagne passes and then probably put in the cross of his career so far for Welbeck, who, let's face it, 5 minutes ago blazed a sitter over the bar. Talk us through your thoughts on Albion's equaliser.
Well, starting with the Dunk ball, from my angle, it looked like, and this was a long ball. It looked like Minte just sort of picked his boot up 20 inches and the ball sort of resting under it. It was so precise. That cross, it kind of dissected the Brentford line. And it's interesting when you see the replay, Welbeck knows what's going to happen, and he is making that run. So
yeah.
It was actually a brilliant run by Welbeck.
Brilliantly
to enable
timed
the
run,
whole
yeah.
Move. The time was brilliant. But the cross was fantastic. It was undefendable, that cross, as far as I'm concerned. And then Welbeck's shot was very interesting because it almost looked like it was his standing leg that.
Oh, yeah. He looked like he did it with the wrong foot, didn't he?
Yeah, he sort of stepped down, but at the same time, shot into the corner.
I'm not saying it's a shot. I'm saying basically that the cross was so good, he just had to divert it into the back of the net.
Yeah.
But he was still a good 15 yards out. So,
it was a beautiful goal. And Andy, that's 7 goals for Danny this season. He's just getting, he's on target to like surpass last season's record of 10, which is the first time he got double figures in his career.
Yeah, no, he's aging like something, which they'd never mentioned in the commentary. I can't remember what that thing is as well. He's, but it's just, it's amazing to see him lasting 90 minutes almost every game. I think I heard something about like his minutes per game is higher than he's ever had in his career when he's been with us. Certainly over the last couple of seasons. And what, you know, I don't mind how old he is at all. If he keeps on doing what he was doing, he can play till he's 50. If that's going to help us. But so Dora remind me. Yeah,
well,
so no,
his
great.
Birthday tomorrow. He's 35 tomorrow. So by the time you listen to this, it's that he's 35 today. And yeah, it's he is like a spring chicken, really. I mean, he's playing like it's like he is the curious case of Benjamin Button. He's playing his. It's like his career is going in reverse, and he's getting younger and younger.
Yeah, oh, he's I don't know, excellent, excellent. Just love him on the pitch. I think he's a great leader. He's great,
Yeah.
leads by example. No, fabulous.
Yeah, well, this is great. I mean, it's just great because I mean, we said on the show at the beginning of the season that he looked like he was a little bit off the pace earlier on, and I'm just so delighted that he's actually fine. He's caught
I've
up.
always got to say, for all our criticisms, what do we know?
He didn't score in the first five, did he? But now he's got seven in seven
No.
games,
Well,
hasn't
he should have scored before he scored in this game, actually,
Well,
which
I mean, the
was,
city blazed over the bar.
yeah. But it was like, again, but there's some just great interplay to set up that chance for Danny. And the ball from De Kuyper across to Minté in that move was just delightful. But okay, well, I mean, you mentioned spring chickens there. We've got one of those in the shape of Jack Hinshelwood, who very definitely had a excellent shot that was not shanked at all
Went in,
to
didn't
give
it?
us
It'll
the winner.
count. It'll count. It went in. So, above and beyond that, don't care.
Well, it was all of Hinch's own making as well, because that hooked pass out to Minté that just like went, it's just, I mean, he got some egg on that, didn't he? I mean,
Did
that
he
went
mean it, or
miles.
was it a hoofed clearance?
Well,
Justin.
I think he definitely meant that 100%. He is. It has said a lot about him. He's got supreme football intelligence. At the time where he had the ball, he was in a very, very congested area of the pitch, and there was a huge swathe of the pitch that was completely empty. And but I suppose the player who was going to get into that area first was always going to be Minté.
Yeah.
So I think he knew if he could just get the ball there was a very good chance of us getting possession of it. And I think that's Jack Hinshelwood all over.
To be honest, I think Jack was just trying to teach the England cricket team how to play a hook shot. But I mean, Minté still had an awful lot of work to do, and he drove into the box. He got a shot away. It was deflected off the defender, but Jack was there to finish it off with that fine shot. That, you know what? If he'd have hit that properly, I don't think it would have gone in.
Of course it wouldn't. Of course it wouldn't. I mean, the fact it bounced twice, it looked like a trundler. I mean, that's how you. I mean, that
That's
was.
the England cricket team again.
I was about to say that was more like a cover sh a cover drive, wasn't it? And then Q Brentford, actually, irony of ironies, starting to moan about everything because, and I know we're going to talk about the penalty in a minute, but Keith Andrews's comments on Match of the Day after the game just, had me falling off the chair. Because he was moaning about how long it took for the penalty to be taken. And yeah, the Brigham wanted to indulge in some dark arts. It happens the world over. And he was moaning about it. And I'm thinking of all teams, because I think there's a stat that Brentford are the one team in the Premier League that take the longest to take a corner and or throw in.
No,
It's.
they wasted 5 minutes of time taking throw-ins in a game a couple of
Yeah,
weeks ago.
I can well believe it. So, sort of suck it up, Keith. It's. You've got a decent team there, and they're going to be going places. And Brentford is still a club that's punching above his weight. But, try and figure out some reality here, because frankly, to accuse someone else of mucking about is, it holds no water.
It was I like Keith Andrews when he played
I
for us. He
like
was
him,
great.
but it was just the disappointing comment.
Yeah. Okay, well, obviously Bart did save the penalty towards the end. Was it a penalty, guys? It was soft.
I've got to
Was
say
soft.
inconclusive because
It was one of those ones that the VAR wasn't going to overturn. If it had not been given, it wouldn't have been. But it was the
Oh, a
best
modern penalty.
a modern, but it was the best way to win the game.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, if you score in the last minute, that's great. But it's the way that the away fans are building up their expectation. They're going to get something out of the game. Mm. It's the very last minute. It's the very last kick. And they've got all that deflation, especially as I had a text from a Brentford fan when they went 1-0 up with just 3B emojis. I didn't hear from him for the rest of the game.
It wasn't even who invaded the pitch, was it?
Can I just say something about both those penalties? Now, I'm taking Match of the Day again as a point of reference here, but I think a lot of people are going to say it. Now, I've always said the best penalties, or the one that is a good penalty, is the one that goes in, with the possible exception of, what's his name, Christian Baz. Was it Woking, was it? Where it just went over the line. But the point is if you take a look at it, both penalties were put in exactly the same spot. It just so happened that Bart dived the wrong way for the first one. If he'd have done exactly the same thing for the first one, he'd have had the same result. In other words, just fall very slowly to his right.
The second one was terrible, though.
My point is that I think that the first one, in that sense, was just as bad. If Bart had gone that way, it also would have looked a bad penalty.
I mean, it's like Danny Welbeck's penalty at Everton was just as bad.
Sorry, what I'm saying is that one was seen as a good penalty and one was seen as a poor penalty, and yet they were both put in exactly the same space. Yeah. And it's all about which way the keeper, or whether it beats the keeper and therefore goes in.
Okay. Before we move on, that was Jack Hinchwood's ninth goal for the Albion so far, which is... Wow. A great return from him. And, you know, I'm just hoping that it carries on.
Well, it's also a timely return as well, isn't it? Given Belieber's horrible drop in form.
So, gun to head, guys, would you start him ahead of Belieber on Sunday? Sorry.
Yes.
Justin?
Oh, I'm not sure about his fitness. I would do if he was fit, and I was convinced he could do 90 minutes. It may be that Gomez gets that central berth and Matoma comes in. I don't know.
Have you been drinking like liquid optimism there, Justin? Jesus.
You know what? I just want to see us play a midfield at the City Ground because it's been a while.
Well, I mean, it'd be the perfect return, wouldn't it? I mean, of all people, Hinchwood, and you think, well, hang on a minute, I'm the only midfielder here. I would start Hinchwood. I mean, you say, can he play 90 minutes? I'd be probably quite happy if then Belieber came on for 20 minutes because, you know, substitutes generally get fired up, don't they? They're champing at the bit to get on. And so Belieber coming on for the last 20 minutes, if Hinchwood can't do 90, then I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that. And don't forget, Hertzler generally uses his substitutes pretty well.
It's interesting you use the term fired up there, Al, because, you know, I closed the show a few weeks ago whilst you were away with a song called All Fired Up by Pat Benatar, which would be, you know, it really gets the juices going and gets you dancing. I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's 100 times better than Freed from Bloody Desire.
Yes. We've only got 10 minutes left of the show, chaps. And I do want to talk about Andy's exploits up in Suffolk. But just a quick one round the room. One, are you fed up with Freed from Desire yet? And if you are, what would you have? Come Justin? On, don't be shy.
I don't mind it. So it's just, I can't think of anything better.
It's just generic, though. That's the thing. And it's like everyone does it. And it's like, can't we have something, you know, Praise You would be good. Or
Andy?
Praise You would be good. That'd be a good shout. I mean, might need a little bit of remixing to make it. I don't know. I'm sure that we know someone who might be able to do that for us. But it is generic, isn't it? But everyone joins in with it, and it's a
I'm sure there's some more 90s dance classics that could be repositioned, requisitioned for the purpose. It's just, you know, just be, you know, in Brighton we should be more original. I mean, like, I hate the fact that the all the songs are just basically rehashed from another player. You know, there's 70 odd years of popular music culture. Use it, dive into it, find something unique. I can give you some ideas. It's like, you know,
how do you create all that? Do you know what I mean? You don't do it like they do it. you know, a club in South London, you know, where they get choreographed sort of people to tell them what to sing. That's not our way of doing things, is it?
Well, you know, I could put on a tutu and get into a dance studio and, like, we can do some don't. Great
and
choreography.
How many wins in a row? Is that 5 wins in a row and you'll do that, AD?
I'm growing my hair, actually. But...
You know, Andy, that temptation is, you know, 5 just scares
come
me
on,
now.
Because, come on, 5 wins know, in a row, and AD's going to act as a cheerleader and a tutu. Brilliant. Excellent. You've heard it here first.
He is Gully's girl. Right. So, Andy, I think we can put. I personally, I'd love to have Do I Love You by Frank Wilson, but no one knows that. So,
you're right. They don't. They don't.
No, exactly. It's brilliant, but, you know, I feel sorry for people down like Northern Soul. But Andy, so you're in Suffolk. Mm. You say you've been there for 25 years and you're living in the town of Sudbury, but you're a bit more involved in a local football club than probably most people are in their village, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, we are a small town. Oh, first, you know, we are, you know, it's
apologies.
A small town. No, it's first.
I suppose Sudbury town is the clue there, isn't it?
So, like, the year that... it's interesting. I've been putting together something on the Sudbury game in the 96-97 season. And for me, that was the very lowest point of the club's history. Sure. Because Steve Gritt came in just afterwards and we went on an upwards trajectory. And recently, Sudbury played Hereford in the FA Trophy. And I met a few Hereford fans and or directors now, because I'm a director at AFC Sudbury. And I introduced myself as a Brighton fan as well, and the conversation didn't kind of go on very well after that. But I've been involved about 18 months originally, because my kind of background, I've got a bit of health and safety training and stuff, so they brought me into support with some health and safety stuff, all the really exciting things behind a football club, which no one wants to talk about, so let's not start there. But it's you know, it's really good. It's nice being part of the community, and I think it's taken up more of my football time as things are going on. But we've got 50 teams. We've got
50
50 yeah.
Different age groups.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're doing really well. We've got 2 3G pitches, 1 brand new one. You know, and we're kind of playing at the highest level AFC Sudbury is. But Sudbury Town, the year after the season that they played the Albion, they'd overspent. They were in what was effectively the Conference South then. And then a couple of years later, they merged with another team in Sudbury and we made AFC Sudbury, and that's who I'm a director at. And it just sucks you in a bit, really, because it's more than just about the men's first team or the women's first team, who are doing really well. It's all about the kids' football and all age groups and stuff. And you get to make interesting decisions, like what colour do you want your away kit to be? You know, and it's like,
what colour did you want your away kit to be?
Well, we all have a dream of doing that, don't we?
Well, it was
crayons out.
It was like, do you want red or blue? That was it. That was the choice.
Are you saying you didn't go for lilac?
Oh God, I don't like that. And I buy every one of the shirts and home. I do love the shirts, but no, I don't like that kit at all. But
what are Sudbury's home colours?
Yellow and blue. Red away, but I've got the women's away shirt on at the moment, which is a lovely sort of pink and purple number. It's excellent. Love that.
Not that far off lilac, you know.
You're right. I mean, this whole thing, I mean, like these smaller clubs in these local communities, it is very much about the community and, you know, giving the opportunity for these kids to go and have the opportunity to play. And these 3 and 4G pitches, you know, you see it at Worthing, and you know they've got a lot of teams as well. I'm not sure how many they've got, but you know, that pitch gets used all day, every day by the community. And I'm sure it's the same in Sudbury, is it?
Yeah, no, it is. But they need renewing, which is crazy. You think that wouldn't do, but sort of like that. That's quite an expensive thing to renew the pitch, but you can recover the money through the pitch hire and stuff. But
isn't something to do with FIFA though, or I suppose who.
There's a FIFA pitch test, which is a nervous moment, I think, for every club whose pitch is getting a bit old like ours is. So they come along and they sort of say, how well does the ball bounce and roll, etc. So, they do. They do come out and do that.
Yeah. Now you're talking about Sudbury Town playing the Albion in the Cup, what, nearly 30 years ago now. You're on a bit of a quest to track down some of the protagonists in that for an article for another string you have to your bow. So do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, yeah, sure. So write for Dogma as well. Comes out three times a season, dogmabrighton.com. If you've not seen it, it's a lovely, really nice printed fanzine. It's lovely. And to have been able to put some of my experiences and stuff from the Albion in there is really nice to have that and have that on the shelf. So yeah, I've been with the link between the clubs this season and stuff. Tomorrow I'm speaking to Stuart Storer and George Paris. Nice. So thanks very much for your help, guys, and getting hold of them. So I'm going to talk to them about that game at the Goldstone when we went out of the FA Cup and their experiences up here at Sudbury and it was a really dark moment, I think. So I did say, you know, this is not a fun moment from that season. It all ended so well, of course, but this probably wouldn't have been the lowest point for me.
Yeah. So
are you going to sneak up behind George and say hi?
Or wait 25 years to give Stuart. But I mean, that must be kind of a, like I say, I do take your point here, Andy, is you almost approach this with a bit of a wince. You think, I want to talk to you about the lowest ebb in my favourite club's history. And by the way, you were part of it. And how on earth do you approach that?
I think probably don't remind them about that too much. I think it's sort of just say, do you remember that game? And they, you know, like I did speak to Stuart Storer, and that's a strange for sensation, you know, as a, you know, and I texted a friend of mine afterwards, and he said, he didn't say Stuart Storer, he said Stuart Storer. You know, that's
the only way you can do it's the only way you can do it.
And he's saved in my phone now, Stuart Storer, and it's exactly how it should be. But
you can probably get the commentary from the and actually have that as a ringtone itself.
Yeah.
Well, there's your main cover line on the front cover, isn't it? Dogma.
But yeah, no, it's nice. I mean, you know, the three clubs, they've been through, you know, all different cycles. Hereford going out of business, and Sudbury, we've had our financial kind of issues of late, and being on the board and trying to move things forward and keep the clubs with stability is why I'm there. And part of being involved is because of what happened to the Albion and what nearly happened. It's been interesting.
You know what? If things had gone differently at Hereford, it could very well have been us.
Yeah,
very. So, what level are AFC Sudbury at now? And as a director of 18 months, what do you believe your realistic ambitions targets are for, say, let's say, the rest of this decade?
Yeah, so we've got just financial stability is the first target for me. So, you know, the success for me is the club being sustainable and here for the longer term. You know, that's the number one target. Mm-hmm. In terms of on the pitch, we're currently playing at step three, which is only our third ever season at that level. But our gates, you know, we're gates of around 300 compared to some other teams in our division of sort of over 1,000. So they've got a lot more spending power than us. And the women's team are at sort of the fourth level, doing really well.
That's
really
not too
bad, is it? They're in the same league as Fulham and QPR and MK Dons. And we've got a really good academy set up. There's lots of really good positives about it. So if you're ever in this part of the world, you know, just come along. And we've got a lovely clubhouse with some nice beer and some friendly people. So we're...
Which is the local brewer, then.
Justin doesn't like beer. I mean, just put it out there.
We have other drinks are available, Justin.
No, they're not. No. Listen, we've come to the end of the show. I did actually want to spend a little bit more time on this talking about AFC Sudbury, but we'll have to have you back in another 2.5 years and just let us know how it's going. But I think I'm going to have a look out for Sudbury's fixtures. And do they actually ever play down this way, or are they specifically in that particular area?
No, it's really hard because of the lease structure and because of the geography of the country. We play the middle stretch across the country, all the way from Lowestoft to Worcester, you know. So we're not in the Eastern League Premier, which is the ones where you'll get your Lewis, I think, and that sort of level. So no, not unless we're in a cup competition. But
yeah, well, yeah. I mean, presumably the pyramid gives you the chance to progress if you're successful.
Yeah, it does. It's just you don't get paid any, and you don't get any money for getting promoted. There's no money, prize money for in the league. You only get your gate money, and if you're playing teams that are further afield, your gates actually go down. You know, because you don't get so many travelling supporters, you don't get so many local derbies. So you actually, financially, you're worse off getting promoted in a way. But you want the club to perform the highest.
Do you see a correlation though? I mean, obviously, Sudbury's not far from Ipswich. So if Ipswich are away, do you get do the attendance fluctuate depending on where they are?
I don't really look out for Ipswich results. So I don't know where they're playing. Living around here is, and the Ipswich fans can be tiresome. Yeah. So I don't tend to.
Because we go to Worthing a lot with if we're not if Albion are playing on the Sunday or whatever, and like if Brighton aren't playing, their tendencies tend to go up. So I just wondered if that was the same with yourselves and the other local big teams. I mean, Norwich is miles away, but it's
Colchester's the closest one to us. Although their crowds aren't huge, I haven't actually checked it out, so maybe we'll look into that. Maybe we need to do more to grow the gates. So
there's a marketing point there for you, isn't there?
Worthing, for instance, used to have a special deal where if you're a Brighton season ticket holder, you get in for a fiver.
It used to work. Yeah, I think they've got their own fan base. They've got their own fan base now, believe me. But
that is very, very true.
Good luck.
It's all about the Hinchwoods this week.
Listen, Andy, good luck with all the stuff at Sudbury. And I say, it's probably a shame. At least you don't have to suffer the indignity that Merthyr and South Shields do of having to play each other in the, in their regional divisions.
And with that, that is all we have time for. So thank you so much to Andy Message. Thank you to Justin Brentnell. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. We're back a little bit later next week. We'll be back on Thursday, but look out for us then. See you then. Bye.